Hello and welcome to The Deep Dive. I'm Pat Livingston, your guide to navigating the ever-shifting landscape of global news.
And I'm Chris Sinclair, here to help us synthesize the most crucial insights from the day's top stories and connect those dots for you.
Today, we're embarking on an in-depth exploration of the Bloomberg for Saturday, August 23rd, 2025. Our mission, as always, is to take a stack of compelling sources and extract those critical nuggets of knowledge, giving you a shortcut to being truly well-informed without getting lost in the information overload.
We've got a truly expansive array of stories today, cutting across finance, technology, geopolitics, and even our planet's future. We'll be connecting these seemingly disparate dots, exploring deeper implications, and ensuring you walk away with those aha moments that make understanding the world just a little clearer.
You'll find that today's headlines reveal a world grappling with the very definition of progress. From the breakneck speed of AI and the future of clean energy to the intricate dance of global politics and economic policy. So let's jump right in. We're going to kick off our deep dive right where many of us feel the most direct impact, the economy, focusing on the intricate dance of central banks, market shifts, and global trade. First, a critical look at the U.S. Federal Reserve, which appears to be standing at a significant crossroads.
Absolutely. The spotlight is firmly on Fed Chair Jerome Powell, especially after his eagerly anticipated speech at the annual Jackson Hole Symposium. He signaled a potential rate cut, a really notable shift from his previous, more optimistic stance on the labor market.
He certainly did. Powell explicitly referenced a weak jobs report for July and warned of rising downside risks to employment, including the potential for higher layoffs and higher unemployment.
Yeah, that's a stark contrast to just last month when he presented a much rosier view of the employment picture.
So the question now becomes, what has changed so dramatically in the Fed's outlook?
Well, what stands out is how carefully hedged Powell's message was. He's clearly in a challenging situation, balancing the growing weakness in the labor market with persistent inflation risks.
And those risks?
These risks, he noted, are now clearly visible on consumer prices due to President Trump's tariffs.
Mm-hmm.
While Powell expressed belief that these tariff effects would be relatively short-lived, he did acknowledge the possibility of lasting inflation.
Right.
This really encapsulates the Fed's dilemma. Labor market data pointing in one direction, towards easing, and inflation data pulling in another, towards caution.
And the financial markets wasted no time reacting to this potential pivot. Treasuries jumped, and the Bloomberg Dollar Spot Index, which broadly tracks the dollar's value against other major currencies, fell by 0.8%.
A significant drop. Traders are now pricing in near certainty of a quarter-point rate cut at next month's meeting, with some even betting on a half-point reduction.
Which is usually reserved for emergencies, right?
Exactly. A half-point cut is a big signal.
For you, our listener, watching your investments and savings, this signals potential shifts in the cost of borrowing and the stability of the economy. A rate cut generally means cheaper loans for things like mortgages and car payments, but it also often reflects underlying concerns about economic slowdown.
And beyond the immediate market reactions, the Federal Reserve is also navigating what's been described as unprecedented pressure from President Trump. He's openly attacked Powell for not cutting rates, going as far as threatening to fire Fed Governor Lisa Cook.
Powell, speaking directly from Jackson Hole, very clearly telegraphed the importance of Fed independence. He stated unequivocally that decisions would be made based solely on their assessment of the data and its implications for the economic outlook and the balance of risks. We will never deviate from that approach.
That's a powerful statement against political interference.
It is.
Yet Trump and his critics, who have nicknamed Powell Too Late Jay, argue he's been behind the curve, citing abnormal revisions to Bureau of Labor Statistics, the BLS data.
And these revisions were larger than usual.
Yes, notably larger. The BLS itself attributes this to fewer resources and a labor market in transition, partly due to Trump's policies like immigration crackdowns and efforts to reduce the federal government size. So there are factors at play.
Despite these criticisms and data anomalies, Fed officials maintain they combine official numbers with anecdotal data and private sources, making the best decisions that we can based on what we see in front of us.
And the world is certainly watching this closely. International central bankers are coming to his defense and applauding him for trying to stay above the political fray, recognizing the U.S. economy as the bellwether for the globe.
But I wonder, how does such direct political interference and the perceived questioning of fundamental economic data impact the long-term credibility of central banks worldwide and the trust you place in economic forecasts?
That's a huge question. If the data itself becomes politicized, it really undermines the very foundation of evidence-based policymaking. It makes it much harder for businesses and individuals like you to plan ahead.
And speaking of direct political pressure, President Trump has called for Governor Lisa Cook's resignation, citing claims of mortgage occupancy fraud. For our listeners, this means falsely labeling a secondary home as a primary residence to get better loan terms, a specific and personal accusation.
Governor Cook has publicly stated she has no intention of being bullied to step down and is actively gathering accurate information to answer any legitimate questions. It's important to note, as the sources say, she hasn't been charged with any crimes.
Right.
Interestingly, a Philadelphia Fed report actually found owner occupancy fraud to be broad-based across the U.S., identifying over 22,000 fraudulent loans in a subset of nearly 600,000 they looked at.
That's a significant number, underscoring that this isn't an isolated phenomenon. A former federal prosecutor suggests Cook could argue she was targeted unfairly for political purposes, given the direct comments from Trump and his allies, which some might view as a weaponized investigation.
And while federal mortgage fraud cases can carry decades-long sentences, the average sentence is around 14 months, plus steep financial penalties.
This personal accusation against a high-ranking official adds another layer to the political challenges facing the Fed. It makes you consider what this means for the perceived integrity of these crucial financial institutions and how it might impact their ability to make tough, independent decisions if their officials feel personally vulnerable.
Absolutely. Okay, shifting our gaze globally now.
Yes, let's do that. We're seeing some significant and often divergent movements in monetary policy and market reactions around the world. Let's head to Turkey first, where there's been a dramatic policy shift.
Turkey has officially ended its Kurumali Mevduat, or KKM, deposit instrument. This program was introduced back in December 2021, specifically to support the lira amidst high inflation and a period of unconventional loose monetary policy.
Right, that was a very unique program.
It was. However, after winning the 2023 elections, President Erdogan replaced his economic team with one that has adopted a more orthodox approach. They've been raising interest rates and gradually phasing out KKM.
And the finance minister, Mehmet Simsek, stated the scheme actually made fighting inflation difficult.
Exactly. So this marks a significant pivot towards more conventional economic policy in Turkey, moving away from a very unconventional market-distorting measure. The broader implication here for emerging markets watching this bold reversal is immense.
Oh, so?
Well, other nations might see this as a real-world test case for reining in unorthodox policies and regaining investor confidence, or they might see the risks of such a sharp change. It's a big test.
Okay, moving to Europe, the European Central Bank is holding remarkably steady. Governing Council member Olli Rehn stated there's no rush to lower interest rates further.
Yeah, and the reasoning. Inflation has hit its 2% target, and the Eurozone economy is performing slightly better than thought. So the deposit rate has been held at 2% after 8 previous quarter-point reductions.
That's a very different tune from the U.S. Federal Reserve's potential cuts.
It is. Economists now expect any final ECB rate cut to be pushed back to December, and traders aren't fully convinced of any further moves this year at all. Rehn did acknowledge that geopolitical tensions and the ongoing tariff war are having an impact, leading to somewhat weaker output, though not as bad as worst-case scenarios predicted.
And surprisingly, the Eurozone showed unexpected expansion in Q2.
Right, and business confidence improved after the U.S.-European tariffs deal. So this divergence, with the U.S. potentially cutting rates and Europe holding firm, makes you wonder how these strategies influence global capital flows and your investments across continents.
Because capital tends to flow towards higher interest rates?
Generally, yes. So we could see money move from the U.S. to Europe, affecting exchange rates and investment returns, potentially creating interesting arbitrage opportunities for investors like you.
The U.K. economy, meanwhile, presents a mixed bag, offering a glimmer of hope amidst significant headwinds. British Chancellor Rachel Reeves faces a tough autumn, needing to find as much as $50 billion for her upcoming budget, with tax rises deemed inevitable.
Despite those challenges, there are some positive indicators. The economy grew 0.3% in the 3 months to June, 3 times faster than expected, and 1.2% over the year. GDP estimates for 2023 were even upgraded.
And consumer confidence
reached its best reading since December, though, it's important to note, still in negative territory. Payrolls are down only 165,000 in a 34 million workforce, and job shedding has tailed off. So it's certainly not all doom and gloom.
But there's a structural warning.
Exactly. Bloomberg Economics cautions that the improvement is cyclical, not structural, with productivity remaining woeful. State spending is expected to drop and export growth to slow in the second half of 2025.
Okay, so some caution there. What about mortgages?
On a brighter note for homeowners, the worst of the mortgage pain is over, with more households moving to cheaper deals than more expensive ones over the next 3 years. Corporate debt ratios are also half of 2008 highs.
And there's untapped potential.
Experts note a mountain of savings in the UK, suggesting potential upside if policy can revive consumer confidence. It's a fascinating mix of signals, cyclical improvements versus persistent structural challenges.
How might this influence the UK's ability to navigate broader European economic shifts and maintain its global standing?
Well, it highlights a delicate balance where short-term gains could be masking deeper, long-term issues that require fundamental reform. Navigating that is the key challenge.
Germany, on the other hand, is definitely facing an economic slump. Its economy shrank 0.3% in the second quarter, worse than expected. This was primarily due to manufacturing weakness stemming from efforts to avoid U.S. tariffs earlier in the year.
And the Bundesbank warns that GDP may even fail to grow in Q3. In response, Finance Minister Lars Klingbeil has pledged real reforms in areas like healthcare and pensions by year-end, emphasizing the need to free life in this country from bureaucracy.
What are the underlying issues?
Weak global growth, geopolitical uncertainty, and an aging workforce are contributing to this slide, which really gathered pace after Russia's 2022 attack on Ukraine. Germany's economic health has enormous implications for the entire EU, given its status as the bloc's largest economy.
So these internal struggles,
they will undoubtedly affect the bloc's collective strength on the global stage, potentially dampening the entire European economy's ability to respond to global challenges.
And finally, for global monetary policy, Poland is making headlines with a new bank tax plan that has significantly impacted its stock market. The finance ministry has proposed a new tax, which sent Warsaw stocks, particularly bank shares, down sharply.
This comes at a time when the banking sector has seen record profits, totaling 23.3 billion zloty in the first half of 2025, largely due to high local interest rates. The WIG bank gauge was up 41% this year prior to this announcement.
So the tax is meant to capture some of that profit.
Right. It's expected to raise 6.5 billion zloty in 2026 and over 20 billion zloty in 10 years, reflecting the government's fiscal pressures. However, the Polish Bank Association has criticized the proposal, arguing it would make banks the most taxed industry in Poland and harm the country's $900 billion economy.
So even though it seems like a domestic issue.
Right. This action makes you consider how such government interventions, especially when unexpected, influence investor confidence in a broader European context and what the long-term consequences for economic growth might be. Unpredictable policy shifts, even if well-intentioned, can deter foreign investment, impacting a nation's development trajectory and reputation.
Okay, let's pivot now to the intricate world of global trade and the tariff chessboard, which continues to be a major source of economic and political tension. President Trump is once again driving a renewed tariff agenda.
Indeed. President Trump announced a major tariff investigation on furniture coming into the United States, which sets the stage for new industry-specific levies. This follows his administration's decision to grant full exemptions to 63 small refinery petitions and partial exemptions to 77, waiving biofuel blending mandates from 2016.
And they delayed the tough decisions.
They delayed the thorniest decisions on whether larger refineries will compensate for these waivers. This biofuel decision really highlights a delicate political balancing act for Trump, trying to appease both the powerful oil and agriculture lobbies, which are key parts of his political base.
What's the fallout?
Biofuel producers are warning of curbed demand and a negative impact on corn and soybean crops. Oil refiners, however, face potential annual costs of up to $70 billion from these mandates. Naturally, legal challenges are expected from both sides.
And for you, the consumer, these tariffs can mean higher prices or fewer choices. It makes you consider how these targeted trade actions, even on seemingly niche products, ripple through the economy. Tariffs on furniture, for instance, could make everything from sofas to dining tables more expensive, directly affecting household budgets.
Meanwhile, Canada is expressing cautious optimism about reaching a trade deal with the Trump administration. Canadian Trade Minister Dominic LeBlanc stated confidence after Canada scrapped most of its retaliatory tariffs, hoping to de-escalate tensions.
But despite that optimism, there's no indication that U.S. steel and aluminum tariffs, which were raised to 50% in June, would be reduced. Canada argues its economy is uniquely integrated with the U.S. in these sectors, making the tariffs particularly impactful.
The intricate dance of diplomacy and concessions here is quite telling. It makes you wonder, is Canada's approach scrapping retaliatory tariffs in hopes of a model for other nations dealing with Trump's trade policies, or is it a sign of underlying vulnerability that might be exploited?
It suggests a willingness to de-escalate, certainly.
But whether that translates into desired outcomes remains to be seen.
And in a significant geopolitical development, China is expressing solidarity with India against U.S. tariffs. In a sign of warming relations, China's ambassador to India, Xu Feihong, stated, "China will firmly stand with India to uphold the multilateral trading system with the World Trade Organization at its core."
Wow. That alignment of China and India against U.S. trade policies is a significant geopolitical development. It brings up questions about what this might mean for the future of global trade alliances and the balance of power.
Could signal new economic blocs forming?
It could. Challenging existing global trade structures and potentially creating more multipolar trade environment. Definitely something to watch. The AI frontier. Innovation, regulation, and skepticism.
Now let's dive into the fascinating and often turbulent world of artificial intelligence, where innovation, regulation, and even skepticism are constantly clashing. We'll start with OpenAI, a company that seems to be in perpetual motion with shifting landscapes and internal dynamics.
OpenAI is indeed expanding its global footprint, set to open its first corporate office in New Delhi within months, establishing a formal presence in a key growth market like India.
But internally,
it's also facing internal changes, with Chief People Officer Julia Vlagra exiting the company. This is a significant departure at a time when the AI industry is fiercely competing for top talent.
And the drama doesn't stop there. We've learned that Elon Musk actually attempted to enlist Meta CEO Mark Zuckerberg to help finance his unsolicited, nearly $100 billion bid to acquire OpenAI earlier this year.
That detail is particularly relevant because OpenAI stated in a court filing that this evidence actually undermines Musk's legal claims. Musk has alleged that Sam Altman's partnership with Microsoft betrayed the company's nonprofit mission.
Right, but Musk himself.
Exactly. Musk's own efforts were aimed at either incorporating OpenAI into Tesla or converting it to a for-profit entity, which directly contradicts his stated goal of returning OpenAI to being the open-source, safety-focused force for good it once was.
The boardroom drama and power plays at OpenAI are as complex as the AI it develops. It makes you wonder how these internal struggles will ultimately shape the future direction of one of the world's most influential AI companies.
Absolutely. Such internal turmoil could slow down development, shift strategic priorities, or even lead to further talent departures, impacting the entire AI ecosystem.
While OpenAI navigates its internal complexities, Meta is forging ahead with a strategic approach to AI growth and talent acquisition. They are actively poaching another key Apple artificial intelligence executive, even as the social networking giant plans a general hiring slowdown in other areas.
This targeted hiring demonstrates a clear priority. Meta has also struck a new partnership with AI image and video generator Midjourney, Inc., gaining access to its aesthetic technology for Meta's own AI models and products.
And internally.
A social media post from Meta's Alex Wang emphasized the company's increasing investment into Meta Superintelligence Labs, underscoring their commitment. What's compelling here is Meta's aggressive talent acquisition and strategic partnerships, signaling a strong commitment to leading the AI race, even as other parts of the company might be tightening their belts.
It's a dual strategy.
Right. Internal development and external collaboration, combined with targeted hiring, indicates a clear long-term vision for AI dominance.
Even tech behemoths like Apple are finding the AI race challenging. Their AI efforts are reportedly struggling, marked by an executive exodus and delays to a high-profile Siri update.
To catch up, Apple is in early discussions about using Google Gemini to power a revamped version of its Siri voice assistant. This indicates a potential move towards outsourcing more of its core AI technology.
And they're integrating other external tools, too.
Yes. Apple's iOS 26 operating system will offer a ChatGPT option for image generation, and the company has even killed a publicly announced project to develop its own generative AI-based coding system, opting to use ChatGPT and Claude instead.
Despite these external partnerships, work continues within Apple's Foundation Models team. which recently began testing its first trillion-parameter model, a significant leap in its internal AI capabilities.
But Apple is also playing defense, accusing smartphone maker Oppo in a lawsuit of poaching a highly paid member of the Apple Watch team and encouraging him to steal trade secrets. This follows numerous past lawsuits by Apple against ex-employees and rivals for intellectual property theft.
This demonstrates that even tech giants like Apple are navigating the complex waters of AI development, balancing internal innovation with strategic external partnerships and rigorously protecting their valuable intellectual property. It forces us to consider how this impacts the broader competitive landscape.
It certainly pushes companies to be incredibly agile, constantly reevaluating those build or buy decisions.
Now, the world of microchips is where the geopolitics of AI truly come into sharp focus, especially concerning AI integration and hardware. Tesla, for instance, is set to integrate DeepSeek and Dubo AI voice controls into its vehicles in China.
Right, showcasing the localized demand for AI services. But for NVIDIA, a key player in AI chips, the challenges in China are significant. NVIDIA has asked its suppliers to halt production related to its H20 artificial intelligence chips, which were designed specifically for the Chinese market.
Oh, I'm hot.
This followed Beijing urging local companies to avoid using the H20 due to security risks, specifically concerns about location tracking capabilities.
And the market reaction.
Immediate impact. Mm-hmm. NVIDIA's shares slid, while Chinese chipmakers like Cambricon Technologies Corp. and Higon Information Technology Co. Saw their shares soar on investor bets that they would become alternative suppliers.
What's NVIDIA's response?
NVIDIA CEO Jensen Huang expressed surprise at Beijing's concerns and stated the company is in dialogue with authorities, reiterating that the H20 houses no such security backdoors. He added that developing a follow-up chip for China depends on the Trump administration's decision.
This situation perfectly illustrates how the geopolitical contest for technological dominance is clearly playing out in the semiconductor industry, creating significant market volatility and shifting supply chains.
Absolutely. It makes you question what this means for the future of global tech collaboration. It certainly signals a fragmentation of the tech world, where national security interests are increasingly dictating technological development and trade, potentially leading to parallel, less interoperable systems.
And in another bold move, the U.S. government has sealed a deal to take a nearly 10% stake in Intel Core, representing an $8.9 billion investment funded by grants from the U.S. CHIPS and Science Act and Secure Enclave Program.
This is described as an unconventional bid to reinvigorate the beleaguered company and boost domestic chip manufacturing. President Trump hailed it as a great deal for America and also a great deal for Intel, calling semiconductors fundamental to the future of our nation.
Will money alone fix Intel's issues?
Analysts suggest probably not, but pressure from the Trump administration could help secure more clients for Intel's production arm.
This deal exemplifies Trump's new brand of economic statecraft, which also includes previous agreements with NVIDIA and AMD, giving the U.S. 15% of revenue from AI chip sales to China, and even a golden share in U.S. steel after its acquisition by Nippon Steel.
The government taking an equity stake in a major tech company is a bold, almost unprecedented move. It makes you wonder how this industrial policy and increased government intervention might reshape the tech sector and influence your investment decisions.
It could lead to a more nationally focused tech industry, perhaps.
Potentially, yes, with implications for innovation and global competition.
While the hype around AI is immense, a counter-narrative is also emerging, the case for being an AI hater, or at least a skeptic. This viewpoint suggests that an AI bust could be economically devastating, unlike the dot-com bust, which, despite its collapse, left behind new information infrastructure.
Right. The argument highlights a misalignment, where hundreds of billions of dollars are poured into developing advanced large language models, primarily benefiting chipmakers like NVIDIA. This leads to soaring asset prices and an index heavily weighted to a single industry,
creating a huge risk if that sector falters.
Exactly, a risk of crashing the entire stock market. There's also concern about tech companies increasingly tapping private credit to build data centers, posing another economic risk.
Are there concrete signs?
Signs include disappointment with GPT-5, which many users say is worse than its predecessor, and an MIT study showing that the vast majority of pilot programs involving so-called generative AI failed to lead to revenue growth.
This perspective forces us to critically examine if the financial returns from AI are truly materializing and if the current investment structure is sustainable for the broader economy. What stands out to you in this skeptical viewpoint?
Well, it challenges the narrative that all AI investment is inherently good. It makes us consider whether the massive investments are creating real, tangible value beyond just boosting stock prices for a select few, you know.
Beyond the AI gold rush, other segments of the tech industry are facing significant struggles. Take the video game sector, for example. Mike Morhaime, a co-founder of the legendary Blizzard Entertainment, is seeing his new company Dreamhaven struggle.
Yeah, its multiplayer shooter, Wildgate, sold only 130,000 units, and Sunderfolk, just 62,000 copies, both well below expectations. Frost Giant Studios, also founded by Blizzard veterans, faces similar challenges.
And this isn't just about individual companies.
No, the market is saturated, with record numbers of new games being launched. Forever games like Fortnite and League of Legends, which are constantly refreshed with new content, make it incredibly hard for new releases to gain traction.
And investors are pulling back.
Venture capital investment in the gaming industry has halved since its 2021 peak, with the lack of breakout hits cited as a key reason. So what does this all mean? Even with big names and funding, the competition for your attention in the digital entertainment space is fierce.
It highlights how difficult it is to break through in a mature, consolidated market.
Exactly. Even with innovative ideas, network effects, and established player bases dominate.
In the aviation industry, China's COMAC is facing an uphill battle against established giants like Boeing and Airbus. Despite China's success in cars and trains, it remains woefully behind Western industrial technology and planes. This is underscored by reports that Chinese airlines plan to order nearly 1,000 new jets from Boeing Co. and Airbus SE.
COMAC's C919 jet, designed to compete with the A320neo and 737 MAX, struggles to sell internationally due to a lack of airworthiness certification from gold standard regulatory bodies outside China. It's also heavily reliant on Western-made parts, making it vulnerable to U.S. tariffs.
And production issues, too.
Production has also been a challenge, with COMAC delivering only 5 C91 times as of mid-August, far short of its planned 75 for the year. COMAC is attempting to build an international presence with sales offices and generous financing terms in Southeast Asia, and is also developing a China-made engine to reduce reliance on Western suppliers.
This really underscores the sheer difficulty of entering high-tech, high-stakes industries like commercial aviation.
Absolutely. Despite national backing, overcoming established duopolies and certification hurdles is a monumental task. It's a testament to the immense trust and regulatory approvals required in critical sectors like air travel, which aren't easily replicated.
Shifting gears to cybersecurity, French telecommunications company Orange SA suffered a ransomware attack by the Warlock cybercrime gang, with business customer data stolen and posted on the dark web.
And this isn't the first time for Orange this year.
No, it's the latest in a series of incidents following attacks on its Belgian division and the publication of employee data from Romania online. Telecommunications companies are attractive targets due to the valuable financial information on customers and critical data and communication from governments and businesses they store.
You might think of data breaches as an abstract problem, but these incidents show a very real and persistent threat to critical infrastructure and personal information.
These attacks underscore the constant need for robust cybersecurity measures, impacting both national security and individual privacy on a tangible level.
Okay, finally, let's quickly touch on some broader fintech and crypto developments. Australia's Financial Crimes Agency has ordered Binance Holdings Ltd's local arm to appoint an external auditor, citing serious concerns with its money laundering and terrorism financing controls.
In other news, Visa Inc. has shut down its open banking business in the U.S., citing regulatory uncertainty regarding consumer data rights and potential higher fees for customer information. This comes as the CFPB reworks a rule banning banks from charging for data access, which JPMorgan Chase & Co. plans to do.
On the crypto front, Ether surged to a new record, topping its November 2021 all-time high and increasing more than 40% this year, outperforming Bitcoin.
Why the surge?
Attributed to its adaptability, significant absorption by Ether-focused treasury firms, $17 billion worth apparently, and efforts by the Ethereum community to promote its network use. Bitcoin, meanwhile, once known for wild swings, is showing signs of maturity as its annualized volatility drops to 38%, comparable to a blue-chip stock like Starbucks.
So speculators are moving elsewhere.
Seems so, potentially to more volatile alternatives like Ether. We're also seeing some interesting pivots in valuations. Metaplanet, a hotel operator that pivoted to Bitcoin accumulation, $2.1 billion worth, appointed Eric Trump as a strategic advisor in March, a move that saw its stock reverse losses and rise in Tokyo.
And OnlyFans
paid its owner, Leonid Ravinsky, $701 million in dividends, a record for 2024, ahead of a potential $8 billion sale. Turkish fintech Midas, a commission-free trading platform, is now valued at nearly $1 billion. HSBC Holdings Palak has made an undisclosed investment in Daoshore, a Chinese cross-border e-commerce fintech firm. And China's National Development and Reform Commission announced it has drafted new rules to regulate pricing for internet platforms.
So the world of finance is constantly being reshaped by digital innovation, from new forms of currency to new ways of doing business.
But it's also grappling with the need for regulation and oversight. This dynamic tension between innovation and control will likely define the financial landscape for years to come. 3. Geopolitical tensions and global power shifts.
Our next deep dive takes us into the turbulent waters of geopolitics, where tensions are high and global power shifts are in constant motion. Let's start with a complex situation involving Russia, Ukraine, and NATO's eastern flank.
President Trump has again threatened Russia with massive sanctions over the war in Ukraine unless an agreement is reached in about 2 weeks. This represents a swing back to a tougher stance after an inconclusive meeting with President Vladimir Putin.
But hopes for a quick truce are dimming.
Yes, Russian officials have been noncommittal about a meeting between Putin and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky and insist on having a say in Ukraine's security arrangements.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, NATO's easternmost members, Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia, are experiencing a sharp rise in radio and satellite interference.
Accusing Russia.
Yes, accusing Russia of positioning electronic warfare equipment near their borders, with Lithuania reporting a staggering 22-fold increase in GPS jamming incidents.
The digital battlefield is clearly as real as the physical one. These incidents show how non-kinetic warfare can disrupt daily life and challenge military alliances, impacting everything from aviation to ground communications.
Absolutely. This interference threatens civilian transport safety and poses a direct challenge to NATO, as Russia continuously tests NATO, probing both our military and political responses to exploit divisions.
Is NATO responding?
The bloc's Galileo Global Navigation Satellite System has launched a new capability to counteract signal spoofing in sensitive areas like the Baltic Sea. But the disruption is expanding further inland and to ground level, now affecting mobile phone frequency bands.
And further south, the Congo-Rwanda conflict persists despite ongoing peace efforts.
Yes. The UN Security Council warns that security in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo is deteriorating due to persistent conflicts, including clashes between Rwanda-backed M23 rebels and the Congolese army. This violence continues despite a U.S.-backed peace agreement signed in June and ongoing talks between M23 and Congo in Qatar.
And the M23 group
is making incremental gains and, with alleged backing from Rwandan army members, killed at least 319 civilians in July in 4 villages alone, according to the UN. The Trump administration has redoubled U.S. efforts to stop the conflict, and the U.S. ambassador to the UN has called for stronger sanctions against those responsible.
It makes you wonder how these long-standing proxy conflicts undermine regional stability and challenge international peace efforts, even with major global powers attempting to intervene.
It's true. These conflicts often have deep historical roots and complex internal dynamics that are incredibly hard for external powers to resolve definitively.
Next, let's turn our attention to several instances of authoritarian moves and democratic challenges unfolding across the globe. In Venezuela, President Nicolas Maduro is calling on Venezuelans to enlist in national militias ahead of the potential arrival of U.S. warships in the Caribbean.
Over Maduro's 12 years in power, the military has largely supported him, receiving control of ports, oil concessions, and mining projects, and holding numerous cabinet positions. The mobilization of militias in response to perceived external threats is a classic move for authoritarian regimes.
What does this signal about Venezuela?
It makes you consider what the signals about the internal stability and international relations of Venezuela. It suggests a government feeling under pressure and willing to use nationalist rhetoric to consolidate power and potentially confront perceived foreign aggression, which could escalate regional tensions.
In Bosnia, lawmakers in the Serb-run half of Bosnia-Herzegovina have voted to hold a referendum, directly defying central authorities who recently ordered the Bosnian Serb leader out of office.
This move risks plunging the country into chaos amidst growing ethnic tensions in the Balkan nation. For you watching Global Stability, this highlights how quickly simmering ethnic and political tensions can reignite in historically volatile regions.
That delicate balance can be easily disturbed.
Precisely. In Indonesia, President Prabowo Subianto dismissed Deputy Manpower Minister Emmanuel Ebenezer, who was named a suspect in an extortion case. This marks the first sitting cabinet member to be implicated in an anti-corruption investigation under his administration.
What are the allegations?
Ebenezer allegedly received 3 billion rupiah, or about $183,000, in kickbacks for facilitating workplace safety certificates caught in a sting operation.
This incident is a significant test for President Prabowo's pledge to not tolerate corruption, even among allies. The incident sparked public outcry, with social media recalling Ebenezer's controversial past remarks.
This event truly tests the credibility of a new administration's anti-corruption stance. It makes you consider how such high-profile cases impact public trust and investor confidence in emerging economies. A strong, decisive response can bolster confidence, while a weak one can undermine it, signaling that corruption remains entrenched.
Moving to Europe, the Dutch Caretaker Coalition fractured after a center-right party quit due to a dispute over Israel policy.
Foreign Affairs Minister Kasper Veldkamp resigned, citing his inability to secure agreement on meaningful measures in response to Israel's actions in Gaza. These included entry bans for Israeli ministers and revoked export permits for Navy ship components.
This leaves the Netherlands with only two parties in its caretaker government, further complicating efforts to form a new government after upcoming elections. Key ministers are now absent as the EU grapples with security guarantees for Ukraine and U.S. tariff talks.
It highlights how quickly international events can unravel domestic political stability, even in seemingly distant conflicts.
And on the Korean Peninsula, North Korea accused South Korea of a dangerous provocation during a recent border incident. This adds to tensions as Pyongyang reacts to ongoing annual joint U.S.-South Korean military drills.
This raises an important question. How do these frequent low-level military provocations contribute to regional instability and the ever-present threat of escalation on the Korean Peninsula? Each incident, however minor, adds to the cycle of mistrust and heightens the risk of miscalculation.
Next, we turn to President Trump's domestic political influence and various allegations that continue to shape the American landscape. In Texas, the Senate approved a new state congressional map backed by President Donald Trump. This move is seen as boosting Republicans' chances of maintaining control of the U.S. House in the 2026 midterm elections.
In Boston, New England Patriots owner Robert Kraft is campaigning for his son Josh Kraft in the Boston mayoral race. Robert Kraft urged voters to judge Josh on his track record, his merits, and not false narratives linking him to entitlement or to affiliations that they perceive to be negative.
However, incumbent Michelle Wu has heavily criticized Josh Kraft's campaign funding, referencing billionaires, Trump donors, and lawyers engaged in implementing Donald Trump's anti-Boston agenda. This highlights the persistent influence of national political figures and narratives in local elections, influencing everything from policy to perceptions of wealth and power, even down to the community level for you.
These national political divisions can often trickle down and polarize local races, making local issues national talking points.
In a significant development for national security, Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth removed Lieutenant General Jeffrey Cruz as head of the Defense Intelligence Agency, DIA.
Why? Cruz's agency reportedly challenged Iran's strike assessment, providing an early finding that suggested U.S. strikes on Iran's nuclear program were not as successful as the White House claimed.
Senator Mark Warner called this yet another senior national security official firing, underscoring, the Trump administration's dangerous habit of treating intelligence as a loyalty test rather than a safeguard for our country. Hegseth had previously dismissed the early finding as leaked because someone had an agenda to try to muddy the waters.
This tension between intelligence assessments and political narratives, especially in high-stakes national security matters, reveals a persistent challenge for objective truth in government. When intelligence is perceived through a political lens, it can compromise the integrity of decision-making.
And in a move that signals a potential campaign of retribution against critics, FBI agents searched the home of John Bolton, President Trump's former national security advisor.
The search is linked to an inquiry into whether Bolton retained or disseminated classified documents. CIA Director John Ratcliffe reportedly gave the FBI limited access to intelligence for the warrant.
The White House has denied political motivation, with Trump denying knowledge of the raid beforehand, and VT J.D. Vance stating it had nothing to do with Bolton's criticism. This follows a previous Justice Department investigation into Bolton's 2020 memoir, The Room Where It Happened, which detailed his belief that Trump was unfit for the presidency.
For you watching the political landscape, these actions against former officials raise serious questions about the use of government power and the protection of dissent, suggesting a potential chilling effect on those who might speak out against administration.
Finally, in our geopolitical section, let's explore some significant Latin American political turmoil. In Argentina, President Javier Milei faces a fresh corruption scandal after firing Diego Spagnuolo, director of Argentina's disability agency, ANDIS.
Leaked audio messages allegedly discussed bribery and were linked to Milei's sister. Judicial authorities have confiscated phones and a cash counting machine. Milei's presidency has been marred by other controversies, including promoting a meme coin that later collapsed and allegations of paid dinners prior to his presidential run.
Yet his approval rating holds.
Despite the scandals, Milei's approval rating nonetheless held up at 45.1% in July. It makes you wonder how repeated corruption allegations, even against a president with enduring popularity, affect the long-term governance and stability of a nation like Argentina. It can erode public trust and make it harder to implement necessary reforms, regardless of popular support.
In Brazil, the once-united Bolsonaro family is creeking under pressure due to Jair Bolsonaro's coup trial. Text messages released by the Supreme Court revealed deep divisions, including son Eduardo's frustration with his father over President Trump's tariff threats and his perceived lack of enthusiasm for U.S. support.
The family's primary objective now is to win amnesty for Jair Bolsonaro to keep him out of jail and allow him to run in the next election. This highlights how deeply personal and familial dynamics can intertwine with national politics, especially during times of crisis and legal challenge, often shaping the broader political narrative.
And in Chile, right-wing presidential candidate José Antonio Kast, a frontrunner, is pledging investment incentives in his presidential bid. He has vowed to scrap a capital gains tax on some stock sales and create a new investment statute to spur economic growth.
Kast's support is growing as he taps into voter concerns over crime, a lackluster economy, and a surge in foreigners. Critics note Kast's lack of executive branch experience and potential difficulties in reaching broad political agreements. He aims to accelerate economic growth to 4% and create new jobs.
What's compelling here is how Kast's rise reflects a broader regional trend, where voters are increasingly prioritizing stability and economic incentives amidst social anxieties.
Exactly. This shift in voter sentiment highlights a desire for tangible economic improvements and a tougher stance on social issues across Latin America. Fourway, environment, energy, and resource management.
Our next major section takes us into the critical domain of environment, energy, and resource management, a field undergoing rapid transformation and facing profound challenges. Let's begin with solar energy's shifting outlook.
A new report indicates that Australia's booming utility-scale solar industry may have already peaked, jeopardizing the country's ambitious climate goals. This is largely due to grid challenges. The existing infrastructure has struggled to keep pace with the energy transition due to slow approvals and local opposition.
And it's not just grid capacity. The surge in renewables, particularly rooftop solar, is intensifying market volatility, often pushing electricity prices to zero or even negative, which makes projects less profitable.
You might assume more solar is always good, but this truly shows the complex challenges of integrating new energy sources into existing infrastructure and markets. It highlights the need for sophisticated grid management and storage solutions alongside increased generation capacity.
In China, the solar industry is navigating its own set of challenges, specifically overcapacity. Chinese solar giant Longa Green Energy Technology Comp posted a narrower first half loss, benefiting from a surge in solar panel installations.
However, China's top solar industry body urged companies to address severe overcapacity and curb disorderly competition, highlighting a prolonged downturn. Solar installations in China actually slowed in July as developers awaited details on a new policy that could affect renewable returns.
This is interesting because China is simultaneously a leader in solar adoption and facing the systemic challenges of overproduction.
Right. It makes you wonder how unchecked growth, even in green tech, can create its own economic vulnerabilities. It can lead to price wars, reduced profitability, and even bankruptcies, which can be a drag on the overall economy.
Now, let's look at the future of wind and nuclear power, starting with a significant policy shift in the U.S. The Trump administration has halted work on an offshore wind farm off the coast of Rhode Island by Denmark's Ørsted A/S, a project slated for operation next year.
This is being called the latest blow to the wind industry by the Trump administration, which is actively rolling back Biden-era climate policies, including canceling a massive wind project in Idaho and vowing comprehensive reviews of approval processes for renewable energy projects on federal lands.
And the financial fallout for Ørsted?
Significant. Its share price has dropped and its credit has been downgraded. The company is evaluating all options, including potential legal proceedings. This shows how quickly policy shifts can have immediate and dramatic impacts on major investments and the future of entire industries. It creates a high level of uncertainty for long-term infrastructure projects that require stable regulatory environments.
In Germany, utilities are facing challenges from wind droughts. A prolonged period of calm earlier this year significantly cut earnings for German utilities.
As a response, weather traders are ramping up bets to protect against future calm conditions, structuring weather derivatives, financial instruments whose value is derived from future weather events. This highlights a financial market solution to an environmental risk.
And climate change is a factor.
New research suggests a broad increase in the frequency and length of wind droughts across Europe, with climate change potentially curtailing wind energy availability by as much as 50% in summers and falls. This makes you consider, as countries increasingly rely on intermittent renewables, how do they build resilience into their energy systems, and what role do financial markets play in mitigating climate-driven risks?
The reliance on derivatives suggests an acceptance of climate volatility as a permanent feature,
requiring sophisticated financial tools to manage it.
Exactly. Turning our attention to nuclear power, Nvidia Corp states nuclear power is an excellent option for Taiwan, anticipating a skyrocket in demand from energy-intensive artificial intelligence.
Meanwhile, India's top energy firms are advocating for nuclear power to decarbonize the world's third biggest emitter, but emphasize affordability to replace coal. The Indian government plans to amend rules to allow private firms and address liability clauses that have historically deterred foreign technology suppliers.
But hurdles remain.
High costs, delays due to public opposition, and a shortage of skilled staff remain significant hurdles. So from a tech giant's perspective to a nation grappling with decarbonization, nuclear energy is firmly back in the spotlight.
It makes you ask, what are the trade-offs and long-term implications for our energy mix?
Well, nuclear offers reliable, low-carbon power, but it comes with immense upfront costs, complex public safety concerns, and long-term waste disposal challenges that nations must carefully balance.
Moving on to electric vehicles and resource management, Macquarie Group LTD's infrastructure asset management arm has raised $405 million from global funds for Vertilo, its electric vehicle financing platform in India. Vertilo leases electric buses and trucks and provides charging infrastructure.
This significant investment aligns with India's active efforts to accelerate EV adoption, including extending a $1.2 billion subsidy plan primarily for trucks and buses. What's compelling here is how this significant investment in EV infrastructure in a rapidly growing market like India shows a global commitment to the energy transition.
But also highlights the need for substantial capital to make it happen.
Precisely. It's not just about building the vehicles, it's about building the entire ecosystem to support them, from charging networks to financing.
In China, Dongfeng Motor Group Co. plans to withdraw its Hong Kong shares and take the rest of the company private, with a new stock listing plan for its luxury new energy vehicle line, Voya.
The Wuhan-based car maker is struggling in China's highly competitive EV market, where legacy brands are losing ground to new players like BYD Co. Voya, however, has been a bright spot, with sales up 88%.
For you, the automotive enthusiast, this is another example of intense competition driving consolidation and strategic shifts in the global EV market.
Yeah, companies are constantly repositioning to survive and thrive in this dynamic sector, often by spinning off successful divisions or focusing on niche markets.
Meanwhile, Kazakhstan is pressing ahead with a $4 billion sulfur fine on several oil majors, including Eni SpA, Shell Pelrec, Exxon Mobil Corp, and Total Energies SE. This is despite the companies claiming victory in an appeal court case weeks ago.
The government insists the fine stands and is pushing for higher revenues from its fields, having previously sued for over $160 billion in damages in international arbitration. This makes you consider how sovereign nations balance the need for environmental protection and revenue generation against international contracts and the operations of global energy giants.
It's a complex legal and diplomatic challenge.
Definitely, with far-reaching implications for energy investment and environmental standards globally.
And in California, the direct impact of climate change is starkly visible. Firefighters are battling an out-of-control blaze in the state's wine country amidst intense heat and dry weather.
This reflects the increasing intensity of wildfires in the U.S. West, which are linked to rising global temperatures and whiplashes between parching droughts and drenching rains, those extreme shifts between very dry and very wet periods.
You see the direct and devastating impact of climate change on communities, affecting livelihoods and the environment right at home. It's a powerful reminder that climate change isn't a distant threat, but a present reality directly impacting the lives and economies of people in developed nations.
Exactly. Now, our next discussion within this segment concerns forests, carbon, and climate change, an area with significant debate and evolving understanding. In Sweden, a climate fight has erupted over whether forest owners should be paid for harvesting timber or for keeping trees standing to sequester carbon, in line with ambitious EU targets.
What's the industry saying?
The forest industry lobby warns of 7,200 job losses and increased costs if trees are left standing, highlighting the economic impact of such policies. Interestingly, the private sector is already moving, with Estonian startup Arbonics brokering carbon credit agreements with Swedish forest owners.
This debate in Sweden highlights the economic and ethical complexities of carbon sequestration policies, pitting traditional resource industries against emerging climate solutions.
It forces a reevaluation of the value of a standing tree versus its harvested product and how we financially incentivize both.
And here's something that might turn a common assumption on its head. New research suggests that forests in certain areas of the world can actually add to global warming, with bare, reflective ground surfaces sometimes doing a better job of cooling the planet.
Right. This is due to the albedo effect, where lighter surfaces reflect more sunlight, while darker forests absorb it, potentially offsetting the cooling effect of carbon sequestration in some regions. This finding raises concerns about the climate benefits of forest-based carbon projects and calls into question claims of emissions reduction, especially since the effect of albedo is not considered in any carbon crediting protocols to date.
This truly turns a common assumption on its head. For you, thinking about effective climate action, it's a powerful reminder that not all green solutions are universally beneficial, and that science continues to refine our understanding of complex ecological interactions.
We need to look beyond superficial green solutions to truly understand their net impact.
In a bold move for large-scale conservation, Brazil has secured support from Amazon allies for a $125 billion global forest fund known as the Tropical Forest Forever Facility, TFFF. This fund aims to protect tropical forests by generating investment returns in high-yield fixed-income assets.
Endorsed by the Amazon Cooperation Treaty Organization, which includes Bolivia, Colombia, and Ecuador, among others, the fund seeks long-term funding beyond traditional grants and carbon credits. However, there's a potential hurdle. An official involved in planning the TFFF suggested that the diplomatic crisis between Brazil and the U.S. could lead the Trump administration to oppose the World Bank's participation as a prospective trustee. The plan has also drawn criticism for linking forest conservation to unpredictable financial markets and applying a profit-driven approach.
This innovative financing model is certainly a new frontier for large-scale conservation. It makes you wonder if it's a crucial step forward or if it introduces new risks by tying environmental protection to the volatility of financial markets.
The blend of finance and environmentalism here is certainly a subject worth close observation.
Finally, let's consider global warming's impact on worker productivity. A joint report by the World Health Organization and World Meteorological Organization highlights that a warming planet is weighing on workers' health and productivity.
Increasing heat waves elevate risks of heat stroke, dehydration, and kidney dysfunction. Productivity drops by 2% to 3% for every degree above 20 degrees Celsius, with the U.S. potentially losing $100 billion annually. Almost half of the global population is affected, particularly manual laborers in outdoor industries.
Are there proposed solutions?
Changing work hours to limit midday sun exposure and the potential for siesta culture to move into cooler parts of Europe are being considered. This isn't just about distant weather events. It's about your health and your livelihood.
It's a call to action for businesses and governments to prioritize climate adaptation for their workforces, and it makes you consider what steps we can take individually and collectively to adapt to these profound environmental shifts and protect worker well-being, V-markets and consumer behavior, investing, spending, and lifestyle. Now let's shift gears to markets and consumer behavior, looking at how we're investing, spending, and living our lives. The IPO market, after a quiet period, seems to be heating up again, signaling shifts in investor sentiments.
E-commerce firm Pattern Group, Inc. has filed for an initial public offering, disclosing growing revenue of $1.1 billion for the first half of the year and net income of $32.1 million. This listing could raise an estimated $400 million.
And they're not alone.
No, Pattern is joining a busy slate of possible debuts in September, including payments company Klarna Group Pelos, cybersecurity firm Netscope, and blockchain-based credit company Figure Technology Solutions, Inc. The resurgence of the IPO market indicates a potential renewed appetite for growth and risk-taking among investors.
It makes you wonder if we're seeing a post-pandemic recalibration or a new wave of market optimism driven by specific sectors.
It certainly suggests a belief that market conditions are stabilizing or improving enough to support new public offerings.
In commodity markets, hedge funds have slashed their bullish positions on crude to a 17-year low, primarily due to waning risks of additional sanctions on Russian crude.
This brings concerns about a global supply glut back to the fore. Meanwhile, ProFarmer projects a record corn harvest in the U.S. at 182.7 bushels per acre, though slightly below USDA estimates, and soybean production roughly in line with USDA record estimates.
But there are regional variations.
While Western crops show strong potential, diseases and extreme heat fatigue could pressure the harvest in the Eastern Belt. For you, the investor, these shifts in commodity markets are crucial indicators of global supply-demand dynamics and geopolitical stability. Changes in oil prices can impact everything from transportation costs to the prices of goods, while crop forecasts directly affect food prices.
We're also seeing an interesting dynamic in the debt market. Investors are craving long-term debt, but firms are reluctant to sell.
Yes, investors are clamoring for long-dated bonds, those with maturities of 30 years or more, from blue-chip companies, with orders averaging 5 times the notes for sale, the highest ratio since 2021. High-grade bond funds have seen record inflows.
However, companies are hesitant to lock in elevated rates for such long periods. Also, fewer mergers and acquisitions have reduced the need for big funding deals that typically include long-duration bonds.
This divergence suggests investors are seeking stability and yield in a high-rate environment, while companies remain cautious. It makes you consider what this insatiable demand for long-term credit tells us about market expectations for future interest rates.
It implies investors believe current rates are attractive and might not go much higher.
Or they foresee a future where these long-term yields will be very valuable.
Exactly. In the private equity space, there's talk of financial alchemy amidst a liquidity crunch. The private equity industry is struggling to return cash to investors, with distributions as a percentage of net asset value tumbling.
Firms like Bain Capital and KKR & Co. are resorting to complex financings, using commitments to continuation funds. Those are investment vehicles that allow private equity firms to hold on to assets longer as collateral and moving assets into special funds without crystallizing losses.
What's the goal of these tactics?
They aim to generate favorable returns and bolster liquidity for investors, but introduce increased leverage and complexity, potentially putting investor capital at risk. Pensions and endowments are reportedly shunning some pitches due to their complexity and high financing costs.
You might not be directly involved in private equity, but these sophisticated financial maneuvers can create ripples through broader markets and raise questions about transparency and risk.
It's a reminder that even in the world of big finance, some strategies can introduce hidden risks and shift the burden to investors.
Let's turn to retail and consumer spending trends, where we're seeing mixed signals from major giants. Walmart Inc., TJ Exhaus Inc., and Lowe's Coast all upgraded their forecasts this week, and Home Depot Inc. returned to sales growth.
But even Walmart, the retail behemoth, has challenges. It left its full-year operating income estimate unchanged and missed Q2 earnings for the first time in 3 years, partly due to higher cost of worker and shopper injury claims. Shares fell 5%.
And tariffs are impacting them.
Yes. Walmart reported that tariff-driven inflation led to a 1% price increase in the U.S. in Q2, with costs increasing weekly for imported goods. Middle and lower-income households are buying less in non-essential categories.
In response, Walmart is reinforcing its value credentials with 7,400 temporary price reductions, aiming to gain market share from struggling rivals like Target Corp.
On the other hand, off-price retailer TJX raised its full-year earnings guidance, benefiting from stores clearing unsold goods and offering premium products from brands like Gucci at lower prices. Lululemon, the athletic wear maker, is facing pressure from cheaper rivals and shifting style trends, with analysts noting a pickup in discounting.
Consumers are clearly demanding quality and fashion and frugality all at once. This complex demand environment forces retailers to constantly adapt their strategies. What stands out to you about this evolving retail landscape?
It's a dynamic and challenging environment where only the most adaptable retailers will thrive, offering value without sacrificing quality or style, and constantly reading the tea leaves of consumer preference, you know?
Yeah. In a shift impacting many daily routines, stricter return-to-office policies are boosting caterers. These mandates, coupled with the high cost of eating out, are driving more workers to corporate cafeterias, which are now offering upgraded amenities and better food to entice staff.
This trend is boosting volumes and growth prospects for major caterers like Aramark, Compass Group Pliac, and Sodexo SA, with some segments seeing it as their fastest-growing unit. Europe, however, with its more entrenched hybrid work models, is seeing a more tempered boost.
Your lunch break for many is becoming an extension of company policy, directly impacting a significant industry.
It's an interesting ripple effect of the post-pandemic work shift, where companies are increasingly using food as a hook to draw employees back to the office.
We're also seeing a significant demographic trend giving rise to what's being called the silver economy. With falling birth rates and longer lifespans, the global market for older consumers is reshaping. Despite their higher purchasing power, consumer goods still largely cater to the young, meaning this is an overlooked market.
This presents a multi-billion dollar market for products tailored to people over 50 across food, personal care, toys, and fashion. We're seeing some examples already. Nestle and Danone are developing adult nutrition products. U.S. meal delivery service Bistro MD offers silver cuisine, specially designed for the over 50s.
Toys, too.
Toys for over 18s now comprise nearly 20% of the market. And in fashion, brands could incorporate features like higher necklines, more pockets, looser sleeves, and adaptive fastenings into stylish designs for older adults.
The demographic shift is undeniable, and it raises an important question. How can businesses and society as a whole adapt to and capitalize on the needs and purchasing power of an aging population, rather than simply lamenting falling birth rates?
It requires a fundamental shift in perspective, recognizing the significant economic power and specific, often underserved needs of older generations.
In a contrasting trend, China's Gen Z stocks are surging again, driven by robust earnings and fervent demand of young consumers. Young adults are willing to spend on products and experiences that provide emotional satisfaction, leading to bumper results for toy, bubble tea, and jewelry makers.
Pop Mart International Group LTD and Laopu Gold Co. saw overseas sales grow 400% or more. This illustrates how a generation's unique spending habits can create significant market opportunities and redefine investment trends. It shows the power of cultural shifts in shaping market dynamics, moving beyond basic needs to experiential and emotional consumption.
Finally, for this section, let's consider Germany's surprising embrace of stock investing. Germans have historically been cautious investors, with 37% of their assets in bank savings, almost four times the U.S. level due to 20th century hyperinflation. Only 20% of household financial assets are in stocks.
However, a mindset shift is occurring, fueled by social media finfluencers and financial bloggers encouraging stock market investment. Reddit boards on investing are fizzing with messages. Chancellor Friedrich Merz is seen as more investment savvy, even mooting investment accounts for all six-year-olds with state contributions to buy stocks.
And the market potential.
German stocks, by one measure, 66% of GDP versus 2x in U.S., are less expensive than those of other nations, with the DAX outpacing the S&P 500 this year. The caveat, however, is that much of the new money from German investors still flows to U.S. tech stocks, though German defense contractors are gaining interest.
Can a generational shift in investment behavior spurred by social media and policy revitalize a stagnant economy and provide long-term financial security for its citizens?
It's a slow cultural change, but it could lead to a more vibrant domestic capital market if the trend continues. This transformation in investing culture is truly fascinating for you, especially if you're looking for lessons on how individual financial choices, when aggregated, can lead to national economic shifts. It underscores the power of both grassroots movements and top-down policy in shaping economic futures. 6. Social dynamics, public health and policy debates.
Finally, we turn our attention to social dynamics, public health and policy debates, which reveal the intricate human side of global affairs. Let's start with a crucial issue, public health and data credibility, specifically regarding COVID boosters.
There's widespread confusion surrounding COVID boosters due to conflicting messages from HHS Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and leaders at the FDA and NIH. This disconnect has cast doubt on vaccine safety and necessity, prompting major medical groups to issue their own evidence-based recommendations.
This has a direct impact on patients who face uncertainty about eligibility, potential out-of-pocket costs, and inconsistent availability, particularly for young children and pregnant women.
New HHS guidelines restricted shots to high-risk groups. And while the CDC softened its stance for children, uncertainty remains over public insurance coverage through the VFC program and pediatricians' willingness to stock vaccines.
You might think public health guidance should be clear-cut, but this situation truly shows how deeply politics and public trust can complicate even the most vital health decisions.
When trust is eroded, even science-backed recommendations can face significant hurdles and create real-world challenges for public health.
In another critical area of public health, there's enormous untapped potential of genetic information in medicine. Genetic information can be life-saving in a medical emergency for conditions like heart failure or seizures, yet it's rarely collected from adults.
A Penn Medicine study found that a quarter of ICU patients under 40 carried a mutation relevant to their treatment, and those with undiagnosed conditions were more likely to die.
However, reluctance for genetic testing stems from patient concerns over privacy, potential discrimination, and data breaches. Adding to this, the Federal Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act, GNA, protects against job and health insurance discrimination, but doesn't cover long-term care or life insurance, leaving significant legal gaps.
The enormous, untapped potential of genetic data to transform healthcare versus the very real and valid concerns about privacy and discrimination presents a serious dilemma. It makes you wonder how we bridge this gap responsibly. We need robust legal frameworks and ethical guidelines to unlock this potential without compromising individual rights and privacy.
Building on that, let's delve into the profound and often unsettling topic of modern eugenics and the ethics of genetic engineering. We're seeing echoes of Aldous Huxley's Brave New World in the current trend of tech investors funding fertility startups where embryo screening is for babies, and billionaires openly having many children, alongside sci-fi concepts of superhumans.
This modern revival, much like pre-war eugenics, is driven by scientific optimism. The desire to optimize the species and avoid disease, and demographic pessimism, fueled by fears of falling birth rates and civilizational collapse.
And the technology is advancing.
Advances in genetic screening now allow testing for a wide range of predispositions, and IVF technology facilitates embryo screening even for couples without fertility problems, as exemplified by Orchid Health's polygenic risk score for $2,200 per embryo. This polygenic risk score, for our listeners, essentially combines information from many genetic markers to predict an individual's risk for complex diseases or even certain traits.
Modern advocates, such as those behind the slogan Choice Over Chance, reject the term eugenics, emphasizing choice and lack of compulsion.
However, the distinction between voluntary and compulsory can blur. If some parents start availing themselves of genetic advantages, then others may feel obliged to do likewise due to societal pressure. Some even suggest humanity may have no choice but to breed smarter humans to control AI.
And the moral defenses against misuse are arguably weaker today than before World War II.
That's the argument. Due to the waning of Christianity and more powerful commercial forces, with startups now offering IQ predictions based on genetic tests. As science pushes the boundaries of what's possible, this raises a profound question. How do you, as an individual and as part of society, grapple with the ethical implications of genetic engineering and ensure that choice doesn't inadvertently lead to new forms of inequality or pressure?
It's a fundamental challenge to our understanding of human dignity, fairness, and the very definition of what it means to be human.
Shifting to higher education challenges in the U.S., we're seeing top colleges like Stanford, Duke, and Rice making unusually late acceptances from their waitlists, even offering incentives like grants to fill empty spots just weeks before classes begin.
Why so late?
This is seen as a hedge against uncertainty stirred up by Trump's attacks on higher education and immigration, which include pausing billions in federal research funding and attacking diversity programs. The number of foreign students entering the U.S. slid 28% in July, with India down 46%, significantly impacting university finances as these students typically pay full tuition.
And universities are feeling the pinch.
Cornell University has even warned of urgent action, including job cuts and an indefinite hiring freeze due to an uncertain and unprecedented federal landscape and rising costs. The confluence of political rhetoric, federal policy, and global mobility, it's clearly creating significant financial and enrollment challenges for U.S. higher education.
It makes you wonder how these pressures might reshape access, research, and the global standing of American universities.
Potentially forcing a reevaluation of business models, or even leading to more domestic student focus.
Finally, let's examine urban homelessness and policy in Washington, D.C. The Trump administration's crackdown in Washington, D.C., includes the National Park Service leading aggressive homeless sweeps, removing tents and possessions from encampments.
Unlike in the past, NPS is reportedly acting, quote, without communication, without collaboration, without warning, with local housing service providers. Since August 11, federal authorities have made 630 arrests and cleared 48 encampments, but it's difficult to determine what became of the people inside them.
Experts and advocates argue such sweeps are
costly and counterproductive, leading to loss of property and vital records, with few shelter placements. The Biden administration's strategic plan had previously called such sweeps counterproductive, though the U.S. Interagency Council on Homelessness was abolished in April.
For you, observing social policy, this illustrates how urban challenges intersect with federal governance, with direct impacts on the most vulnerable populations. It shows how policy shifts at the federal level can have immediate and sometimes harsh consequences on local communities and individuals, often without addressing the root causes.
Wow, Chris, what an incredible deep dive into today's Bloomberg report. We've journeyed from the intricate dance of central bank policies and the breakneck future of AI through the complex web of global geopolitics and the urgent challenges of our environment, right down to shifts in consumer behavior and pressing social issues.
Indeed, Pat. What truly stands out is how interconnected all these stories are. From the geopolitical implications of AI chip production to the direct impact of climate change on our daily lives and even national economies, the narrative is one of constant evolution, adaptation, and increasingly, collision.
It truly shows that to be well-informed means understanding not just the headlines, but the why and the so what behind them, recognizing the subtle forces at play beneath the surface.
This brings us to a final thought for you, our listener. With so many significant forces shaping our world, technological, economic, environmental, and social, how do we as individuals and societies navigate this rapidly changing landscape to ensure we're not just reacting to the future, but actively shaping it in ways that benefit everyone? What's one area from today's deep dive that resonated most strongly with you, and which long-term implication will you continue to explore on your own?